सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः। हरिः ॐ। So last week, we started this chapter 10, and the chapter starts by Bhagwan. Bhagwan is starting it this time, not a question by Arjuna. So Bhagwan says that once again, O Mahabaho, the strong, mighty armed one, once again, Bhuya Eva, once again, Mahabaho, listen to my supreme speech, which makes you delighted, Priyamanaya, which you like. Which delights you, and the reason, Vakshami, the reason that I'm telling you this, Hitakamya, with I'm telling you because I have your welfare in mind. So by the word, again, I told you, Bhagwan is not, it's indicating to us that is nothing, not that I'm telling you something new. I have told this thing before. And if we look at chapter 7, he had told us the essence. He had described what his essence was, but to know the essence, a very subtle mind, a very purified mind is required. So Bhagwan says, maybe not all of us are that way prepared, are qualified with that kind of a purified mind. So I will now tell you the same thing, but in different words. So there is a different vision. So I will tell you about my vibhutis. He doesn't say vibhuti here, but I'm going to tell you the same thing, but obviously he can't be repeating the same thing. So it's going to be the same thing, but in a different manner. And Mahabaho here, I told you, represents not for physical strength, mental strength. And mental strength comes from mental purity. So indicating to Arjun that you are a mentally fit, means mentally fit means not that you're insane, not like that, but mentally pure. Single-pointed, devoted. So you will grasp this knowledge quickly. Paramam vacha, speech becomes paramam, I told you, supreme, because of the topic that is being spoken about. When we speak about other people, it is a low kind of a speech. When we talk about events or weather, it is a medium kind of speech. But when you talk about the absolute reality or God or stories about God or Bhagavad, whatever relating to God, then it becomes paramam, which is supreme. And therefore, when he says, listen to my paramam vacha, paramam speech, means we know that he's going to talk about himself. Or he's going to talk about the absolute reality. Priyamanaya, Arjun has listened to 9 chapters already without getting bored, without showing any, signs of frustration or signs like, oh my God, why are you repeating all this? On the contrary, every time he has very consciously asked questions with full awareness, with full understanding, and he has asked the correct questions, not just like any question that came to his mind. He has asked the correct questions, because of which Bhagwan has now presumed that the topic is very interesting to the listener. The listener likes what he's hearing. The listener is delighted by what he has heard so far. And then why am I talking? Why is Bhagwan talking? For his welfare only, for the welfare of Arjun. So we see the Anubandha Chatushtaya here. The Adhikari is Mahabaho. The qualified student is a Mahabaho. Not physical strength, mental strength. The Vishaya is Paramam Vachaha. So the subject matter is Paramam. It is supreme. It is the absolute reality. The Hetu, why is this Paramam Vacha being spoken? For the welfare of the student. And then what is the connection between the subject matter and the subject matter and the hetu, purpose. What is the purpose? He's delighted to hear it. He wants to know it. Okay? So that Sambandha Priyamanaya becomes Sambandha. Then Bhagwan goes on to say that don't think that it is very easy to understand me. Even the devas and the rishis have not understood me. One thing of devas here, if you literally take the meaning, it is the denizens of the heavens. And the one reason is that actually even in heavens, this because it is heaven also is a bhogabhumi. Bhogabhumi means a field of experience which is meant for exhaustion of vasanas. It is not meant for getting knowledge. There what happens is people who have collected a lot of merits go to heaven and they enjoy those merits. So they just enjoy. That's it. There is no collection of more vasanas. So they are only enjoying those things, those vasanas. And then when those vasanas end, they have to come back. So that is one reason that the devas cannot know. The other reason is that these devas and rishis, if you try to objectify God and understand him, nobody can understand him. Because God is the subject, the final subject itself. So as long as you're extroverted and you're looking outside for answers about God, you are not going to get them. So once you turn your mind inwards, and that is not, if these devas and whoever, if it is, even for us, if we cannot turn our mind inside, then we cannot know that. And that is indicated, deva, I told you, devas are also our sense organs. Why are they devas? Because we are actually praying to them, means what? We are offering oblations to our senses 24/7, 24 hours of the day. Color and form for the eyes, sound for the ears, smell for the nose, taste for the tongue. So we are constantly putting these ahutis. You know, we put ahuti and that's what we say is prayer. You know, we have Om Swaha, this Swaha, that Swaha. That Swaha, 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 we are doing it to the senses. Therefore, the senses are also known as gods, devas. And what he's saying is, when he says that the devas cannot know me, means that the senses cannot know me. And the reason that the senses can never know him is because the senses are always extroverted. The sense organs by themselves cannot turn inside. It is not possible. What can turn inside is the mind. But what is happening is when the mind is not strong enough, when the senses run out, when they are extroverted, they pull the mind with them. And then the mind runs after them outside. And that is why the senses cannot know. The rishi, the implied meaning of rishi is mind and intellect. So as long as the mind is going after the senses, it cannot know. So the mind, once it stops running and turns inside, then it can come to know God. Otherwise, it can't. And this is what Bhagwan is saying. So the question then arises is that if you're so difficult to know, why should I even know you? Why should anybody try to know you? Because if it is that difficult, therefore Bhagwan gives the third verse, saying that the ones who really come to know me in a sense will be freed of all their sins. And the freedom from sins is disidentification from the body. That is the original sin that we are committing. We are considering ourselves to be something which we are not. So we have taken on an assumed identity because we are actually that pure self. We are that Satchit Ananda, but now I consider myself to be a body with this height, this weight, etc., etc. Then the mind, which is happy, sad, compassionate, sentimental, etc., etc. Intellect, which is intellect, intelligent or dull or whatever. And I have stolen that identity, and that is a sin. Stealing is a sin. So I've stolen that identity. So he says that identification will be broken. Once that identification is broken, you are free of all the sins, because all other sins are coming from this, originating from this original sin that I am the body. So first is I am the body. First delusion is I am the body. Then, of course, then I am mother, father, I am teacher, I am good, I am bad, I am happy, I am unhappy, I am... Everything else is following this original sin. So he's saying that this original sin only I'll cut off, will get cut off. The identification with the body, mind and intellect will be severed. And once that is done, then that's why pramuchyate, prakarshena muchyate. That means forever and ever he will get liberated. Now, we were on verses 4 and 5. We had read them. So what he is now talking about here in 4 and 5 are his vibhutis. I told you this is vibhuti yoga. Yoga is the essence and vibhuti is what is seen. So silence is yoga, speech is vibhuti. In Shri Bhagavan, Bhagavan is essence. Shri, the prosperity that is seen, is Vibhuti. As a rule of thumb, what is seen is Vibhuti. Glory is seen. What is not seen is yoga, is yoga sthiti. Okay, so he is starting with his vibhutis, but all these vibhutis are in subtle form. So he will start with 4 and 5, which are subtle, and later on he'll go into the gross vibhutis, which we can see with our eyes, etc. So buddhi, we started with buddhi. Buddhi is there, jnana and asammoha. This is the first three, and I told you buddhi is of three kinds: sattvic, rajasic, and tamasic. So sattvic buddhi is that which will see the essence easily, which will see the oneness in everything. Rajasic is one which is arising out of likes and dislikes. So when there is likes and dislikes that are in my mind, then that kind of intellect will produce a different kind of knowledge. Intellect produces knowledge in the mind, right? So if that intellect is under the influence of likes and dislikes, then that sort of a knowledge, you know, if somebody does something and we like them, then we don't think that they have done that much wrong. But if we don't like somebody, maybe they have really not done that much wrong. We'll think they've done this big wrong, because that is coming out of likes and dislikes. That is why that intellect determines what type of knowledge is going to happen. If the intellect is very clear, the knowledge will be also very clear. So if it is a sattvic intellect, which means that it can see things clearly, then the oneness will be seen. Otherwise, the oneness will not be seen. Jnana also is sattva, rajas, and tamas. Sattvic knowledge is the one that, again, once again, sees the essence, sees the oneness. Rajasic knowledge will be, because of an intellect being likes and dislikes, knowledge will be distorted a little bit. Tamasic knowledge, we say tamasic knowledge is really not knowledge at all. Okay. Now, when this buddhi and jnana are in sattvic mode, then asammoha will be there. Sammoha is samyak moha. Moha is delusion. Sammoha, samyak moha means very, very extreme delusion. And when we add a to it, prefix, it is opposite of extreme delusion. So no delusion at all. So the sattvic buddhi and sattvic jnana will give rise to non-delusion. So when you can see the oneness in all, that kind of a knowledge will arise. You will be able to see the essence very easily. You'll be able to see the sutra very easily in that sutra manigana eva, because generally we don't even see the sutra. We only see the pearls or the beads. You'll be able to see that. And once you see that essence, you will not be deluded anymore. This is what already Bhagwan said previously. The one who comes to know me in a sense will never get deluded, will be freed from all the sins. That is what he means there. So then these three, then kshama. We were on kshama actually last time when we stopped. So kshama is forgiveness. And kshama is also of three kinds. Okay. So first of all, kshama, I think I did mention, kshama comes from two roots. There is kshamata and then kshama. So kshamata is ability. Okay, that is one meaning, and ability or strength, and then forgiveness. So basically, forgiveness can come only to a person who is strong, who is really strong. See, if there is a weakling and then some strong person insults him or hurts him or hits him or something, and now this weak person knows that there's no way that I can, you know, hit this guy back. So, okay, you know what? I forgive you. That is not real forgiveness. That is a withdrawal out of fear. That is not. But if this person is capable of retaliating and yet he says, no, I'm not going to retaliate, then it becomes forgiveness. Forgiveness also is of three types. So the highest kind of forgiveness is where I don't even think that the other person has done anything wrong. Okay. One very common example I'll give you, and I'll tell you a story of Eknath Maharaj also. When our finger goes into our own eye, we really don't think that the finger has done anything wrong. And the reason we don't think that the finger has done anything wrong is because I have the sense of I in the eye, E-Y-E, as well as in the finger. I know that the eye is also me, the finger is also me. Now the finger has gone into the eye. Oh, sorry. It's okay. Nothing, no harm done. Eknath Maharaj is a great saint from Maharashtra. And some, you know, there are always people who dislike the Mahatmas. Every time there is somebody or the other. So there was this, these people who wanted to insult Eknath Maharaj. And they knew that Eknath Maharaj, in the, every morning, he would go to the Narmada River and take a bath. So what they sort of hired a hitman in modern terms, not to kill the saint, but he was supposed to spit on Eknath Maharaj. Once he took the bath and came out of the river, he was supposed to spit, because then they thought that Eknath Maharaj is going to get very angry. He just came out of his bath, and if somebody spits, can you imagine what reaction we would give if somebody did that to us? Fine. So the man was standing there at the banks of the river, and Eknath Maharaj, as usual, he just went, took a bath, came out, this guy spat on him. Eknath Maharaj didn't say anything. He just went back. He took a bath, because for them, now he has become impure again, dirty. Went back. Again, he did it. Again, he didn't say anything. He went back and took a bath. Now, this happened 108 times. Until the guy who was spitting ran out of saliva. He ran out of spit. No more. His mouth was totally dry. And at that point, he realized, because 108 times the Mahatma went back and took bath in the river again and again, without saying a word, without even saying, why are you doing it? At least he could have said, what's your problem? Who are you? Like, why are you doing this to me? Right? No, nothing. No why, no complaint, no nothing. Just quietly about turn. That time this guy realizes that this is a great soul, because an ordinary person cannot do this. So he falls at his feet and he asks for forgiveness. And Eknath Maharaj says, forgiveness for what? Actually, I would have only taken bath once in the holy river, but because of you, I took bath 108 times. So thank you. That is the level of forgiveness that the saints have. And the reason is that they see only the self. That level of forgiveness can come only when you have that feeling, it is my finger in my eye. Now who to scold? Right? Or when my teeth bite my tongue or my cheek, I don't pull my teeth out. I don't scold my teeth, because it's all me. And this is the kind of forgiveness that the Mahatmas have, because they're seeing their reflection only. And then so they will see a positive in that also. He said, today 108 times I got in the holy river, I got a chance to take a bath. So you are great. The second type of forgiveness, which is a rajasic type, this is sattvic. The rajasic type is where the person will say, okay, I know you made a mistake. Now you're saying sorry. Okay, fine. I forgive you. So there is an acknowledgement of mistake, that this person has done something wrong to me, but okay, theek hai, I will forgive him. And the third type, which is tamasic type, is when the other person is pleading. You make the other person plead, oh, please forgive me. I'm sorry. And then after, okay, fine. I do it. So that is the type of three types of this thing, depending on sattva. And all this will come from the intellect. If the intellect is sattvic, the knowledge will be sattvic, and then the forgiveness will be sattvic. Intellect is rajasic, it will be rajasic. So all this will follow like that. That's why it's buddhi resulting in jnana, asamo, because if both are sattvic, there'll be no delusion. When there is no delusion, in the case of Eknath Maharaj, he doesn't look upon himself as the body. He's not even looking at the other person as a body. He's looking at the essence, which is the same. If you look at the body, there can never be sameness. It is different. Okay, so he's looking at that essence. So that's why that asammoha is there, with the correct intellect and the correct knowledge. The correct knowledge is the oneness, is the sutra alone. That is only the correct knowledge. Correct knowledge, sattvic knowledge, is the one which liberates. Please understand that. So rajasic knowledge and all, they will bind. They bind us. When it is coming out of likes and dislikes are binding us. And accordingly, we are behaving. So sattvic knowledge is the one that, and that is only the real knowledge. Sattvic knowledge is only the real knowledge. All other knowledges are not the real ones. So kshama has to be developed. Okay, and he's saying this is coming from me only. All these qualities he has said already. Matta eva prathagvida. Matta eva, this verse 5, last three words. Matta eva prathagvida. All these various qualities have come from me, he has said. Don't forget that. All this is coming from him only. Satyam. He means the pure self. Huh? Satyam is truth. And the one definition of truth is what you think, what you speak, and what you do must be in alignment, should be aligned. Most of the times, you will see that we think something and then we speak something else and we do a third thing only. So what we have thought, we don't speak, and what we speak, we don't do, or we can't do, or whatever it is. That's why it is always better to keep quiet, do what you have to do, and then you say, oh yeah, I wanted to do this, so I did this. That's one thing. That's one definition of satyam. The other definition which Bhagwan Shankaracharya has given, he's saying that when I have heard or experienced or known something, and if I am telling that to you, it must create the same kind of experience in your mind. You know, in those of you who are reading Ganpati Atharvashirsham, there it says, satyam vachmi, ritam vachmi. If those who read, or if you have Mantra Pushpam, you can check it out. In Ganpati Atharvashesha, there's the verse is there, and then says, satyam vachmi, ritam vachmi. Now, satyam and ritam, they both mean satyam only. They both mean truth. So the question arises, why is it being said? Why repeat? So it's like basically saying satyam vachmi, satyam vachmi. So why are you repeating? But the difference between satyam and ritam, the both words mean satyam only. But satyam is what I have heard and ritam is what I'm telling you. So what I have heard is true. So in there, the Veda mantra, what is being said is that what I have heard is true and also what I'm telling you is exactly the same thing. So that's why Bhagavan Shankaracharya says, whatever I have heard, whatever I have understood, if I can explain it in the same way that it creates the same kind of knowledge in your mind, then it is satyam. You know, sometimes when I was reading this, I thought sometimes, you know, things happen and suppose we exaggerate things when we tell other people. You know what I mean? Like, especially if we have, like I said, you know, if I don't like the person, even if there is only a little wrong there, I might make it big and tell you. If I like the person, maybe there is a big wrong there, but I'll just say, no, you know, just little bit mistake happened, like that. Then it is not satyam. It is not satyam because you have seen that a big mistake has happened. If you're telling it to somebody, you must tell it as a big mistake. Not because I like him now, that big mistake has suddenly become a small mistake. So that's what satyam is. Okay, satyam, satyam vachmi, ritam vachmi, satyam. Then dama and shama, we had heard this in Tattva Bodh. Dama is control of the senses and shama is control of the mind. So the senses, because they are, in Kathopanishad, we see the chariot metaphor. In of course, even the cover of Bhagavad Gita, we see the chariot. So the horses are the senses and the reins are the intellect. Reins are the mind, and the charioteer, that means Bhagavan Sri Krishna, is the intellect. So the idea is, if the horses, think about the chariot, there are four horses representing five sense organs, and you might say, why four and we have five? The tongue and the skin, they go as one, because tongue also has got skin, na? The tongue also feels hot, cold, it feels, it tastes, but the feeling of hot and cold is there, which the skin, the hands, feet, or anything will feel. So for those two senses, it is one horse and the four horses. If those horses were to run in all four directions, what will happen to the chariot? It'll get disintegrated in no time. Okay, that is why the mind, being considered as the king of the senses, the mind has to be always held by the intellect, because the intellect is the one that is always telling us the correct things. So the sense organs, even in Kathopanishad itself, Kathopanishad says, they are as though cursed to go outside. It's a manufacturer's defect. If Gurudev were to be explaining this, he would say that is a manufacturer's defect. We cannot help it. That defect came when they were manufactured only, that they have to be extroverted and they have to be running outside only. If they keep running outside, and we already said that, we can never understand the essence of this reality by running outside. And that is why the control of the senses becomes very important. Okay, so one way of controlling the senses is by understanding the falsity of the world. That this is not real. Okay, this will give me pleasure now, but it could bring me sorrow afterwards. Anything excess, indulgence, okay? So when I say control means not that you have to suppress them all the time. Actually, in the initial stages, if you're really into spiritual path, you do suppress. You do suppress. Like, no, you know, I can't do this. Or I have to get up in the morning. That is my spiritual practice. Now, if I stay up late at night, I'm not going to be able to do that. So I'm going to give up this late night party or movie or whatever it is. So suppression. But when you start thinking of the suppression, then it will become sublimation. Because when you think about it, you know that that was for the better that you did. You understand? Because when you get up in the next day morning and you're fresh and then your whole day is not ruined because you've not slept late, you're not dozing off in class, etc., 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 then you come to know that that suppression was for my good. And once you come to know that it is for my good, it becomes sublimation. So control of the senses, the mind is in between the intellect and the senses. So the senses are running outside and the intellect is inside. So the mind is the one that has a choice. It can either go with the senses outside or it can go with the intellect inside. Okay. And that is the metaphor. That is what is being shown, that Bhagwan is holding the reins in his hand. And that is what we need to do, is that hold the mind in the intellect. So when the intellect is sattvic, it will be easier to control the senses. Okay. But in the initial stages, by knowledge, you can control discipline, self-discipline, you can control. You can lay parameters for yourself that this is what I'm going to do. And then after that, I'm not going to do. Beyond that, I'm not going to do. And all this will come if you have yourself a goal of spiritually evolving. Okay, so that will come. So he says Dhamma has to be there. And when Dhamma is there, Shama is control of the mind. Control of the mind is also very, very important, because maybe you might close your eyes, but in your mind, the thoughts of the movie will be going on. Because see, senses, mind is subtler than the senses. Senses can only see up to a certain, like now I'm sitting here, I can only see in this room maybe, or in my house, but my mind can even see things in India or Europe or wherever. So mind is subtler than the senses. And because it is subtler, it is harder to control also. But if the senses are controlled, it will be easy to control the mind. And if the intellect has that clarity, has that sattva in it, it will be easy to control the mind. Because the intellect will tell the correct thing, that this is not correct. You must not do this. Okay, so Dhamma and Shama, there are 20 virtues here in between these two. Then Sukham, Dukham. Now there are three pairs, Sukham, Dukham, Bhava, Abhava, and Bhayam and Abhayam. So Sukh and Dukha, Sukham is space, Sukham that come, or Dukham, come is space, Su is Sushtu, means good, so good space, and Du is bad. Bad space. So Sukham is when you are in a good space, when your mind is in a good space. And Dukham is when it is sorrow, you know, when it is in a bad space. So this Sukham and Dukham, these pairs of, the world is a pairs of, is only pairs of opposites. And the point of the pair of opposite is that if we only had one side of that coin, we would really have, we wouldn't have known it only. Like, if there was only day and we had never seen night at all, we would not know the importance of the day. See, now the days are starting to get smaller because 21st September is gone, right? Now we appreciate the summer days when it was longer days. Because the night is becoming longer, we are appreciating the longer day. Suppose if it was same all the time, we would not have an appreciation. That's why the pairs of opposites are there. They're two sides of the same coin, any pair of opposite. Now one side is sukha, one side is dukkha. Know that if sukha is there, then dukkha will follow. If dukkha is come, then even that is going to pass and sukha will come. So it's good space and bad space. These are the two opposites. Bhava and means presence and absence, which means birth and death. So with this presence and a birth and death, if we really think about these words, then they won't affect us. The point of knowing the pairs of opposites is to transcend them. See, with sukha and dukkha, we cannot say that I want only sukha and I never want dukkha. That is not the purpose of spirituality, because that is impossible. If I say that I only want one side of the coin, you can't get only one side of the coin. If you're taking the coin, you have to take both sides. So you cannot say that I want only sukha and I don't want any dukkha. Even Bhagwan cannot fulfill that wish. So what Bhagwan is saying, instead of asking for one, you transcend both. Transcending both means both of them have to have the same effect on you. And that is what he had meant in chapter 2. Sukha dukhe samme krutva labha labhau jaya jaya. Where you make the happiness and the sorrow your reaction to it. Means, see, make happiness and sorrow one. You cannot make them one. Happiness is happiness and sorrow is sorrow. Joy is joy and sorrow is sorrow. But your reaction to them can be one, can be the same. That is what is meant there. That your reaction to happiness and your reaction to sorrow must be the same. That this has come because of my own actions. If it is a bhakta, he'll say, okay, this is God's will. So, you know, whichever way that suits you, you take it in that way. But the pairs of opposite have to be transcended. And transcending means being equanimous in both, being equal to both, means you remain on an equal keel on both. So this birth and death also, if you really think about death, what is death? You will come to know that truly, is there anything known as death? If you think like that. See, the soul is there. We know from our masters, they've told us there is a soul and then there is the body, matter and spirit. Spirit doesn't die. So the word death cannot apply to the spirit, to the soul, to the atma or to the jivatma. It cannot apply. Okay, then no, but it applies to the body. Now think about the body. We know that the body is made of five elements. So when a body dies, so-called dies, so-called, because what is happening? Is it like perishing, totally disappearing? No. What is happening is the five elements are merging with the five elements. They've come from, we have got space in our body, air, heat, fire, element, smell element, so earth element and water. So all these elements are only merging with the elements. They are really not disappearing into thin air. So then if you think like that, then what is death? What is death? They merge and then they again come together to form a body in some other birth. So when you think like that, you know, then even if you take physics, quantum physics, physics also says that there is energy and matter, and then they say energy cannot be destroyed and matter in its final stages of destruction converts into energy. Now what died? What perished? Didn't perish. So this is how we need to understand these. That's why Bhagwan is saying they're both coming from me only. Actually, there is nothing. So, and this is how we can transcend. And then there is bhaya, fear and abhaya, fearlessness, which are both again coming from him. Everything is coming from him only. The point he's trying to make is that this is Vibhuti Yoga, I told you. Vibhuti means what? When you see something, you must be able to remember the Lord. That is all Vibhuti is all about. This is the purpose of this chapter, that whatever you see, you must be able to immediately connect it to me, to God. Okay, so these are the qualities. When you see sattvic buddhi, now see, one more point there. Sattva Rajasthamas, I told you, buddhi is sattva Rajasthamas. If sattvic is coming from him, where is rajasic and tamasic coming? It is also coming from him. It is also, that's why we have always said, Arjun, of course, good and dharma and Bhagwan is there. But Duryodhan also, with Duryodhan, Bhagwan was there. Otherwise, Duryodhan couldn't have been there. So even with evil, that's what he's saying. Both, I am supporting both. So when you see either one of them, you must remember me. That is the purpose here. So he says, fear if you see, and then fearlessness you see, they're both coming from me. One thing about fearlessness, there is fearlessness and there's stupidity. Now, if we think that, oh, I am, you know, this Brahman and what is there to fear, and now I just get up and go in the middle of the night somewhere alone, that is stupidity. Yeah, that is not called fearlessness. That is, it is like there was a mad elephant who was running on the road and the Mahout was saying, get out of the way, get out of the way. And there was a guru and shishya that were coming from the front. So the guru, the minute he heard this Mahout, he just ran and he climbed up a tree and he sat there. And the disciple who had just heard that, you know, everything is Brahman and all that, he just stood in front of the elephant, because elephant is Brahman and I am Brahman. So what can happen to me? Nothing can happen. And of course, the elephant ran over him. Then he got injured and he went to the guru and he said, but guru, you told me that we are all Brahman. Elephant is Brahman and I am Brahman. So why did you run? He says, yeah, I told you that. But then you forgot that Mahout also is Brahman, and that Brahman is telling you to get out of the way because the elephant has become mad. So you cannot say, see, you samadarshina, Bhagwan has said in chapter, you know, like these Mahatmas, they look at a cow and a dog and an elephant and equal. You look at them equally, but your behavior towards them must be according. Huh? Dog is Brahman and I am Brahman, no doubt. But if that dog comes to bite me, I must run, because that upadhi is going to now bite me. So it is samadarshina, not samavartina. Vartina means behavior, means my behavior towards, even towards different people should be according. You know, like when I'm talking to a child, it should be a different type. You know, if suppose now I take classes for adults, if tomorrow I'm asked to take class for Balbihar children, I cannot speak the same thing over there. Yeah, they are Brahman, I am Brahman. I cannot talk. I have to talk small stories and anecdotes and all that. So everybody is equal, okay, but the upadhi is different. That must be remembered. So this bhaya, fear also comes from me. And fear, yes, we say fear is a negative quality, but one thing you must understand, that there are certain kinds of fears that we must have. So we must have fear of doing something wrong. We must have fear. Oh my God, you know, I'm driving. I better be careful. I better not run a stop sign. I better not run a red light. I better not change lanes without giving signal, without checking my blind spot. Those type of fears have to be there. They're good fears, okay? So just because I'm Brahman, I'm fear, I can drive any way I want. It is not like that. So certain types of fears, you know, the fear that, oh, if I you know, don't sleep on time, then tomorrow morning I'm not going to be able to get up on time and go to work or go to class or study. That type of fear should be there. I've got an exam coming. It's time for me. You know, I've got a lecture coming. I should have the fear. Oh my God, I better have time to study for this lecture. That fear must be there. That type of fear. But not the fear that I'm going to die, then what will happen to me and what will happen to my family. Those types of fears are baseless, because I'm never going to die. And whoever, God is only looking after all of us. So we must not worry about those. But these type of fears we must have. Fear and fearlessness. Then he goes on to ahimsa, the verse, next verse. So ahimsa is, is there. Himsa is violence, and ahimsa is non-violence. So violence, himsa, it can be at the physical level, which normally we would not do, but also it is at the level of the speech. Hinsa can be, you know, we can say harsh words. to somebody, insult somebody, say something which is not proper. That also is hinsa, speech. And the third subtle one is in the mind. You know, when suppose if I don't have the guts to say something on somebody's face, I don't have the strength to hit him in my mind. You know, like, I hope something bad. So that also is hinsa. It's not just hitting with your physically hitting somebody or saying something, but even in your mind, you must not think ill of others. Okay? It's a negative thought. One thing is ahimsa. Hinsa, it's a negative thought. This that brings me to, reminds me of one point for kshama, forgiveness. Forgiveness should be practiced because it will give us peace of mind. Same way, ahimsa should be practiced because, if I don't have forgiveness, it'll keep on boiling in my head. You know, he did this, he did this, she did this, she hurt me, she hurt me, she hurt me. And then my mind is not at peace. And if my mind is not at peace, then this studies is not possible. So even with hinsa, if I keep thoughts of, you know, I want to take revenge, something bad should happen to this person. So those type of thoughts are not good. They're not conducive to spiritual evolution. All we're talking about here when we study Bhagavad Gita or any text for that matter is how will I evolve spiritually? Because that is the purpose. So if we practice forgiveness, practicing forgiveness is a control of our reaction in the world. When we are in the world, what sort of reaction we are doing. So when a situation comes and I say, I want to take revenge, right? I'm unwilling to forgive. That is not good. So that reaction has to be controlled. And that is with forgiveness. Ahimsa is the same way. We must not even think of hurting anybody in our mind. Talking of that, so we have a lot of spiders in our ashram. Now we have one lady who cleans the ashram in Vancouver, and so many spiders, she will carry one spider and ahimsa, practicing ahimsa, taking the spider and leaving it outside, taking the spider, leaving it outside. The next Saturday we come, all those spiders have come inside. Okay. Now I explain to her. Whether she listens to me, I don't know. I told her, look, 2-3 ways you can look at that. I will, honest to God, even in my house, I pick up the spider and I flush it down the toilet and I say, Krishna, give this jiva the release. It is a jiva. One thing is, if we release it, it's released from that body. That jiva probably will have an evolved birth. Instead of a spider, maybe it might come as a cat or a dog or some other jiva, right? That jiva might even come as a human being. We don't know. Other thing is, we are all Brahman, okay? Now rats are Brahman and I am Brahman. That doesn't mean that all the rats will come inside the house and I'll say, oh, Brahman is there. Now let me, I can't. Upadhi is different. So we cannot, pest control is the first thing in our building. We have to do, because that is not good. So this spider, when we're cleaning the ashram, the spiders have to be killed, literally killed. What can you do? Right? So that is not ahimsa then. That is not practice of ahimsa. That is stupidity. That is stupidity. So the thing is, if they're going to just come back to us, then what is the point? We cannot live. Tomorrow, if all the spiders are there, then where are we going to sit and take classes? People will be screaming, you know, spider here, spider there. We can't do that. Okay? So ahimsa must be understood. It's understand it. Mahatma Gandhi, that was one, this thing that he practiced, right? Mahatma Gandhi's ahimsa. Samatha is equanimity. Equanimity in all pairs of opposites. And that is the whole purpose. Samatha is a word which has been used quite often in the Bhagavad Gita. And the reason for that is samatha is opposite of mamata. See, ma-ma-ta, that first ma, when it is replaced with sa, it becomes samatha. And mamata is attachment. Aham, I and mine is attachment. Gurudev's definition. It's me and mine. So me and then my family, my house, my car, my this, my that. That is it. So that mamata is to be changed to samata, equanimity, and then that becomes a means to liberation. So equanimity in all situations, equanimity towards all people. So this person I like, this person I don't like, my behavior changes. It must not change. If the person that I don't like needs help that I can give, I must give. Why? Because that help I would have given the person whom I like. Then that same help must be made available to the person whom I don't like also. First of all, there should not be likes and dislikes at all. Okay, that is samatha. So but samatha doesn't mean that, okay, samatha, me and spider are same and now let the spider be inside the house. That is that type of samatha. That's why I told you, samadarshinaha, not samavartina. Our behavior towards certain things have to be like that. When we behave towards animals, I have fear of dogs. You know, I walk and then people are walking with their dogs and they feel offended if I don't like pet the dog, and I tell them it's not your dog, it's just me. I just take the blame on myself. I'm scared of dogs, and please, your dog is the perfect dog and he won't bite, but I'm scared. So that behavior has to be accordingly. But in my mind, I know that of course dog and I am the same. From the essence point of view, we are all same, but upadhi is different. So my behavior towards that upadhi is different. It's like, you know, fan has its own purpose and light has its own purpose. So my behavior towards fan, if I'm feeling hot, I'm not going to turn the light on. Oh, they're both same. Not like that. It's different. That should be understood. So when there is samatha, tushti will come. Tushti means contentment. And contentment is what actually happiness is. Right now, our idea of happiness is when our senses are coming in contact with the sense objects, and then I feel happy. I feel happy I saw a movie. I feel happy I heard a song which I like. I feel happy I ate something which I like. And I think that that is happiness. That is not real happiness. That is only pleasure, what is called pleasure. So what happens is, in pleasure, there is a dependence. So that's why it doesn't become happiness. That bliss that we talk about, Satchit Ananda, that is an independent bliss, where it is not dependent on anything. It is not dependent on your senses. It is not dependent on the sense objects. It is not dependent. See, there are three dependencies. One thing is, suppose you like movies, you have to be able to see the movie. So eyes, you're dependent on your eyes. Second thing, you have to also be able to afford. That is another thing, affording. And the third thing is, the eyes have to come in contact with the movie to enjoy it. So that contact is also very essential. So there is a dependency. And because there is a dependency, it cannot be called as that supreme bliss. Supreme is what is independent. When they say paramam, when they say supreme, there should be no dependency. If there is a dependency, that means one of those things are not there. That means your happiness is gone. Right? So that's why this happiness, it's tushti is more important. Contentment. So you are content. Okay, fine. You wanted to see the movie and you got a chance to see the movie and you went and you saw, and okay, that's fine. But if you don't get a chance to see the movie, if you can't go because of any reason, some reason, you should be content. So content also gives us peace of mind. If you look at all these qualities, they are all the ones that are capable of giving us peace of mind. So that is the goal. Ahimsa, when I don't have thoughts of hurting anybody, I'm at peace. If I have thoughts of, then I have to think, how should I hurt this person? What should I say that will insult the person? What should I do that that person will feel bad? I mean, so many things I have to think. Suppose if I say, I don't want to hurt the person only. Finish. End. Topic ends. If I forgive the person, right? Person like Eknath Maharaj. He didn't even think that the person did anything wrong. So imagine the peace of mind that Eknath Maharaj would have had. Otherwise, why is he doing this? What does he want? How many thoughts? It'll generate more negative emotions, they generate more thoughts. So if you have these, you know, dhamma, control of this, so if your senses are under your control, yeah, you like a movie, but theek hai, if you see it, you see it. If you don't see it, you don't see. If you have that sort of an attitude, you'll be content and you'll be at peace. And that peace is very, very important of mind in the spiritual studies. So tushti. Then there is tapaha and dhanam. So these are two things. Tapas is relating to our own self, and danam, which is charity, is relating to somebody else. So tapas is when I do and various kinds of tapas. So anything can be tapas. Fasting is there. When students' exams are coming, they say 1 month I won't see a movie. Or, you know, I have to get up in the morning, so I shouldn't be staying up late. All this falls under tapas. And what tapas does for us is gives us willpower. It gives us the strength to know that I can live without this thing. Tapas will give us that. I didn't die because this was not there. You know, so it gives us, and then it gives us the confidence that I can do it again. I can do it again. One example that comes to my mind is Mahashivratra that comes once a year in February. I have always fasted, but my fast was my mom used to make all kinds of nice things and we would be eating, and then that was a nice fast for me. And that's what I was doing at home also. I was fasting. I've always been fasting. But when I went to the ashram, suddenly they said only milk and bananas in the ashram. It is Sandeepini, even now. All the cooks are on holidays. There's a huge bunch of bananas and milk is there 24/7. So Shivratri in the ashram, you know. So now when I was there for the first year, I thought, oh my God, you know, am I going to be able to do this? But I had no choice. I had no choice. I was in the ashram. So I said, okay, chalo. And then I did it and I was fine. It was tapas for me because even though I was used to doing Mahashivratri upas, it was a, you know, only grains I don't eat. I eat fruit, I eat milk, coffee, tea, sabudana, everything I was eating. So there I got that confidence. Even after I coming back now for the last 10 years now, Mahashivratri fast, I do milk and bananas, even at home. Because I got that confidence, I can do it. So this is what tapas does. It gives us the confidence. It gives us the, first of all, when I decide that there, you know, first it is suppression because there was no choice, I did it. But then it's like, yeah, I can do it. So there's no question of suppression, right? So tapas will increase willpower. Give us the confidence that I can do it. Give us the confidence that I can live without this thing. Give us the confidence that, yeah, it's okay. It doesn't matter if this thing is there or not, right? And one thing you must also know that tapas has to be always, you cannot do tapas like daily. Then it is not tapas. Suppose if I think, oh, one day I lived with milk and bananas, now whole month I will live with milk and bananas, that is not correct. That also you must remember in tapas. So that's why it is special. It is tapas. So it's like now Mahashivratri only once a year. Or every Monday, then once a week. Or every Purnima day, then once a month. So like that, tapas has to be. Tapas will give willpower. What needs to be remembered is it will not give you knowledge. Okay? Tapas gives you mental strength, mental purity, which will become a means to knowledge, but it cannot give direct knowledge. Parvatiji had done a lot of tapas for Shiva. A lot. Okay, what it gave her was Shivji. She got married to him because that's what was her purpose. She wanted to marry him and she did tapas, a lot of tapas for that. She got purity of the mind. She got what she wanted, Shivji, but she did not get knowledge of the self, which then Shivji, after marriage, told her, gave her. And then she understood right away because her mind was already pure because of the tapas. So that's the purpose of tapas. And tapas is a self-imposed discipline, you can say. So it only relates to you, to you yourself. Whereas with danam, which is charity, it is giving. This giving can be of anything. Money is charity. Anna danam you can do. Food, clothes, this thing. Now with one thing with danam also, the attitude matters very much in danam. Suppose if I do danam because, you know, I think I have so much. And this person doesn't have anything. Now I give. There's arrogance. It shouldn't be like that. Danam should not be like that. Danam should be where I have devalued the object myself. See, if I have value for it and I give it to the other person, right? That means I'm giving him something of value. That is what my feeling is. that it is valuable and I'm giving it to you. It must not be like that. Attitude is very important in charity. In this Danam business, it is the attitude becomes very important. Okay. There was a Muslim saint called Rahim. And he used to do a lot of charity. Every time he gave something to somebody, he would be looking down. He would never look into the eyes of the receiver. Also, Danam, one thing please remember, the receiver must be willing to receive it. The receiver must be willing to receive that Danam. That's one thing. So this saint, Rahim, he would always look down and not look in the eyes of the person who was receiving it. So one day, one person asked him, it means, why would you look down? Means you're feeling ashamed, na? Why does a person, you know, doesn't make eye contact? Because I'm feeling ashamed of something, then I won't make eye contact. So they asked him, you're the one that are giving this. Why are you feeling ashamed? He says, no, I'm feeling ashamed because actually people think I am giving, but actually all this belongs to God. It is not mine. It is not mine. So I feel ashamed. You know, people are saying, thank you, you're so good and you're giving all this. And it's not correct, he says. So I feel ashamed that people are thinking that I'm the one that's giving. So that is what Danam is. And Danam will, of course, charity, like I said, time or building, you know, people build hospitals or whatever, all that falls under that. Danam, there's a lot of things like charity. The time and place of giving charity also matters. That's why they say in Kashi, if you do charity, it is good. Or on certain days, if you give money, donations, then it is good. All those kinds of things are there. Yasha and Ayasha, success and failure. So sometimes we think that we have failed, but actually it may not. We don't know the big picture. What comes to my mind here is when the 9/11 happened, there was a company there which had about in that building which had 1,200 employees, and out of those, about 700 or 800 were fired in one day, on the previous day of that 9/11, previous day of that explosion, and those people thought they were so unhappy that in one day they had all been given the pink slips, but next day this thing happened, and the others who had kept the jobs, they all perished in that. That time, these 700 people thought, oh my God, wasn't it good that we got the pink slip? So we don't know what is success and what is failure, because they would have thought, oh, we failed, right? That's why we got fired. We are not good enough. Therefore, we got fired. So we really don't know what is yasha and what is apayasha, you know, success and failure. So both those are also coming from him. Bhavanti bhava bhutanam. These qualities, different kinds of qualities, arise matta eva prithak vidha. They all come from me. Means what he's saying is, when you see these different kinds of qualities in people, you must think of me. But these are subtle qualities like buddhi and jnanam, and all this is subtle. It is not visible, not physically. How you know how intelligent the person is, or what kind of buddhi he has? Is he fearless? Is he fearful? These type of things you won't know by looking at the person. So that's why these two are his vibhutis only, but in subtle form. So this is when you see these qualities, various qualities in people, you must think of me. That's why he says they've come from me alone. So there are 20 virtues which are given, which are his manifestations. Okay. With buddhi, which is jnana pradhan, and jnana is vastu pradhan. So buddhi gives the knowledge, and jnana is vastu pradhan, means knowledge of the object itself. I think I'm going to stop here. Any questions? Up to verse 10, it's a bit detailed. After 10, there's 5-6 verses by Arjun, which are very simple, and then it'll be all stories. But if you have any questions for now, I thought I was going to complete this and go to 7 and 8, but we'll go next time. Any questions? Any doubts? Okay, all okay, all right. Okay, so we will stop here. We will meet next Monday again. At our same time. All right. ஓம் பூர்ணமதஃ பூர்ணமிதம் பூர்ணாத் பூர்ணமுதச்யதே பூர்ணஸ்ய பூர்ணமாதாய பூர்ணமேவ அவஷிஷ்யதே. ஓம் சாந்தி சாந்தி சாந்திஹி. ஹரிஹ ஓம் ஸ்ரீ குருப்யோ நமஹ. ஹரிஹ ஓம். Okay, Hari Om everybody. I'll see you next Monday. Nice to see you.